President Chu has sent Washington an alternative to the United States North Vietnam peace plan. Senator McGovern claims that Nixon peace plans are a cruel political deception trying to trick the voters in next Tuesday's election. President Nixon, in cross-country campaigning, appeals to the voters to give him 4 more years to help build a structure of peace. And that's the latest from the WOR newsroom. Lester Smith reporting over WOR New York, your station for news as it happens. And now here's Gene Shepherd.
You don't mind a little irony, do you?
Anything?
Or do you? I think most people do. Because irony can tell the truth, and the truth ain't easy to take. You know, speaking of the truth, I just don't think most of us are interested in it. I really don't. I've been listening, you know, if I may interject my own personal attitudes towards the thing called truth. You know, it's so amorphous, so slippery, and in fact, there's often the feeling that it does not exist at all. You know, there's a theory that truth is something that man has invented, like time, and it's a completely non-existent thing. No, think about it for a minute, and you. Here we are, you know, we're nearing the end of a political campaign, and it's one of those, the word truth is used constantly in any political campaign, and it has about as much actual reality, or actual meaning, I guess that's a better phrase, it has about as much actual meaning as, say, if you use the word love over and over again, which has no meaning whatsoever, because one man's love is another man's hate, believe me. And one man's hate is another man's love. It's a, you know, it's one of those contradictions. We recognize the contradiction in the terms like love, but we don't recognize it in the terms of truth. And that truth is in the eye of the beholder, like beauty. And what is beautiful to me may be totally ugly to you. And what is truthful to me may be a bald-faced lie to you. And now that doesn't make either one of us right, nor wrong. So now it's getting complicated. In fact, I think one of the big problems of our time is that we tend to divide people into those two groups, the right people and the wrong people, the good guys and the bad guys, the truthful ones and the untruthful, the evil and the good. And wouldn't it be great if things were that simple? Wouldn't it be well, it'd be no problem at all, you know? Just get rid of all the bad guys. Get rid of all the evil ones, or put them in a pen someplace and educate them, see, so they become not evil anymore, you know? By the way, this has been tried in several societies in the past. Hasn't worked out too well, but it's been tried. Oh, yes, indeed. This is a fantastic problem. It is, because I get letters. Invariably, I always get letters from people who ask me, or usually about this time of the year. I don't know why they ask me particularly, but they say, all right, Shepherd, time has now come for you to really level. What do you think of this candidate? What do you think of that candidate? That's like, you know, they ask me as an authority. And what I'm saying is there is no authority. No authority. And what one person perceives as a truth, and it doesn't make any difference what his education is. That's why very well-educated people in the past, historically, have quite often been on the totally wrong side politically, because what you perceive in the political situation has very little to do with your education. It has to do with a lot of other things, some of them so subtle that we don't even know that it's occurring. So the idea, you know, there's an old concept that goes back to Plato and even before Plato's Republic, for example, that really says that the fit should rule. And you heard this expression. Well, the fit is always defined in terms of the man himself. In other words, you define fitness by yourself. And so if you happen to have a college degree in theology, you tend to define fitness as people who have college degrees in theology. They're the ones who should rule. If you're a businessman and a successful one, you tend to believe that the fit man for rule should be a good businessman. We really know. If you're a political scientist, you tend to believe that the fit are political scientists. They should know. And so on down the line. And yet none of these fields of endeavor have anything to do with passion or morality or other things that are much subtler than just education. They go into many other areas of human expression. What is to say that an educated man cannot also be an evil man? I want you to think about that for a minute. And what is to say that an ignorant man cannot also be a very good and kind and a superb humanitarian? So now you got problems. and I think it's a good time to talk about this, you know, although I shouldn't do this on a Friday night, but it's a good time to, you know, discuss it, because you hear so much talk of politics today. Now here, I'll give you a little story here to illustrate the point. Before we do that, how about a couple of little commercials here? Let's see. How about laying a general tire on you first? Need a couple of good winter cleat tires, right? Well, these are those beautiful General winter cleats, and they are lovely. Gee, you know, they're very sexy, and they're round, and they smell good. And you know the General Tire slogan is that you go in snow, or General pays the toll. How's that for a slogan? In the Bronx, you see Harry or Murray Lester. His name is Murray Lester, or Sam Ayola at Bronx General Tire. And they're at 579 Grand Concourse. Yeah. Well, time for the following political announcement was paid for by the committee for Senator Case.
Hello, I'm Senator Cliff Case. The future of New Jersey, and indeed of all urban areas, depends greatly on the development of a balanced transit system. I was instrumental in getting $1 billion appropriated this year to develop a mass transit system. I helped get Amtrak on a sound financial footing. I support the state bond issue for transportation. I hope that you'll vote for me on Tuesday. Senator Case, I think I've earned your trust.
Paid for by committee for Senator Case.
And we have another one. How about Escape to the Sun?
Wow! Escape to the Sun. An epic drama of intrigue and determination as 8 different people with one common goal set off an incredible all-or-nothing scheme to realize their dreams of freedom. They take every chance. They risk every danger. They play the deadly game of international intrigue to Escape to the Sun. A Cinevision release rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Yeah, Escape to the Sun. Continuous performances. You just can't stop them. Now at the Criterion and the Translux, 85th Street Theaters. You know, I'll tell you, the reason that many of us really seriously, and I'm being very serious about this, I think the reason that many of us tend to be very simple in our thinking is that we're a nation that was brought up on slogans, and it goes back to the very earliest days of America. For example, Poor Richard's Almanac is a compilation of slogans that was created by Benjamin Franklin. Homilies, you know, just little homilies, like a penny saved is a penny earned. Look before you leap. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. All these various slogans, which in themselves, each one is very logical, or at least it sounds logical. But you can produce a slogan that is equally logical, but is directly in opposition to the one that you just trotted out. In other words, I'll give you an example. A penny saved is a penny earned. Now that's a statement for saving your money, right? It's a statement that says if you save your money and if you're very conservative, you're working, you're doing great. You'll win in the end. That's really what that statement says. Well, I can trot out another one by the same author that says, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Now, there is a direct refutation of the first one. It's saying, why don't you go out to Aqueduct? You're never going to win a big bet unless you put your money down. And I could also say, nothing ventured, nothing lost. How's that for a nice twist on the first slogan? So the reason I'm just mentioning this is that slogans have been a part of the American culture for a long time, and American thinking, and it goes back to the very earliest of the frontier days, when a slogan somehow was a much easier thing to produce and to believe in than it is today. And so Poor Richard's Almanac is a classic example of a compilation of slogans. And, of course, most of them are absurd if you really examine them carefully. But they have that ring of truth, like all slogans do. The ring of truth does not mean necessarily truth. Like the smell of cheese does not mean there's cheese around. It means there could be some subtle chemicals at work. So all I'm saying here is that today, here we are, we're just before an election next week, and people are walking around with slogans all over their back. Like I saw one kid, you know, has a slogan on her back. She was riding her bike, looking very concerned, and, you know, with the wheat germ and all that. She had a thing on her back that says, if you're a people, you will vote for it. Well, that's an interesting slogan. Implying, of course, that the others are not human. An interesting thought. In short, even the opposition is people. What is a people? Well, people tend to define the word people, meaning good, of course, meaning me, like me. And so this is an example of the kind of slogan that is beginning to be very big. See, at least slogans about 250 years ago or so, during the days of Franklin, had to have some relevance to a specific action. So a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, you could demonstrably do that. You could take a penny and stick it in a jug somewhere and keep it. But when you have a slogan that says, if you're a people, you will vote for zilch, that's a subtle and more dangerous slogan, because it's defining people as the human beings vote for this person, the animals vote for the other. That's a very subtle slogan. And it's a very, incidentally, a very, it's a slogan that reeks with elitism. It also reeks with a new kind of racism. But that's a curious development of our time, the slogan. And so people, I guess, write to me, and I'm just answering a letter, or 50 letters from kids, who say, Shepherd, who do you believe in? Well, first of all, I believe that what politician a man believes in is a very personal thing. It does not necessarily mean that the information on who he believes in is personal. But the reasons why he believes in them are very personal. And reasons change quickly. You'd be surprised. Now, we have a current problem that's going on here in New York, and it's interesting to see it develop. I'm talking about the school situation, right? Very interesting developments. That I'm sure a lot of those people were on the other side of the fence when it was other schools that were undergoing the process that they're now undergoing. So I'm saying that, you see what I'm implying here. This is WOR New York, and we have a couple of other quickie commercials. Hit the ding-dong, please.
The following statement is by Carter Bale, Democratic candidate for Congress in the new 3rd Congressional District.
There is no higher priority now facing the American people than the question of congressional reform. Representation in Congress must become truly democratic if the faith of the people is to be restored in their institutions and elected officials. Congressional reform will never be achieved if we send mediocre men like my opponent, Angelo Roncalo, to the House, for the simple reason that his soul is owned by the Nassau Republican machine which nominated him. Here is a man seeking the high office of congressman who openly boasts that he will stay on as the Republican leader of the town of Oyster Bay even if he is elected. Under my opponent, employees of the town of Oyster Bay are intimidated into giving 1% of their salaries as a condition of employment. And every local businessman who hopes to do business with the town knows that he must contribute to the party coffers. The choice for Congress this year in the 3rd Congressional District is a choice between the kind of independent, full-time progressive leadership which I offer in my candidacy or the arch-partisan, part-time hack politics of my opponent.
Yep, that was presented by the WOR Public Affairs Department and does not necessarily represent the views of the management there. You know, there it is.
73, 73, 73.
See the 1973 cars, hundreds of them all under one roof at the Greater New York Automobile Show in the New York Coliseum. The most impressive showing of brand new U.S. models ever assembled. Exciting imports, too.
The problem of politics has always been around, and in fact, man is often defined as a political animal. That's one of the reasons he's different from other creatures. The chicken, for example, does not elect his leader at no point. In fact, the chicken, they do have a pecking order. And in every animal, in every living organism, there is a pecking order. Whether or not we like to accept this is beside the point. The fact is that it does exist, and there it is. Now, in our case, here I, as a public performer, people constantly ask you these questions: who do you stand for? Who do you? And I'm inclined to say none of your damn business. Not because I don't want to discuss it, or because it's controversial. That's the thing. To me, who a man stands for is not controversial, not at all. Because it's quite obvious and quite demonstrable that if you stand for, say, McGovern, or if you stand for Nixon, that's not controversial, because millions of people obviously stand for one or the other of those two men. What's controversial about it? If, on the other hand, I said, I stand for Hugh Downs to get elected president, I seriously do, that would be controversial. Not that there's anything wrong with him, but I would be pretty much alone. Now, if, on the other hand, if I said the devil, I stand for the devil to get elected, then that would be controversial. But to say I stand for McGovern or Nixon is not controversial. You can have contention about it. You can argue, if you stand for the other guy, then you can argue with me why I'm wrong. But that does not make it controversial. That's just a matter of opinion. And incidentally, this is another problem of our time. We've come to the point in our curious political evolution where we don't really allow for difference of opinion. In short, we don't say, well, a man who is for candidate X merely differs in his opinion. Since I'm for Y, he differs from me. We have a difference of opinion. No, today we say, well, obviously, since this man is for Mr. X, well, that means then he's evil. He wants to bomb babies with napalm. He's basically dishonest. He's a hypocrite. In other words, we won't say there's a difference of opinion. We say he's being dishonest because he's for that guy. If he were honest, he would be for my candidate. Because obviously my candidate, all men of goodwill know that my candidate is basically the honest one. He's right. Now that is a new development in our time. Now, a lot of people are going to argue with you, and they're going to say, no, that's always been that way. Not so. Candidates have always pointed out that the other guy is the devil incarnate. He's a shiftless skunk, and he's playing with the public morality and all this. This has always been the case of candidates. But people never really necessarily believed that, and they walked around and they says, oh, well, you know, that's politics. One guy always calls another guy a bum. That doesn't mean they really are. But today we're taking it literally true. So that's another big thing. That's a big difference in our time. And as far as I'm concerned, I think that the development of the good guy, bad guy philosophy is one of the most interesting developments in the past 10 or 15 years of our electoral process. You notice that today's good guy is tomorrow's bad guy to many people. Fascinating. I'll give you a specific example, that many of the people that you see now, for example, that are pro-McGovern were about 7 or 8 years ago for the things that McGovern claims to be against, and their political voting record can prove it. Well, now why? Well, you can say, well, that's because they've changed. They see the light. Or many other things. I could be cynical and say it's because they figure if he's going to win, they want to be on his side. I can also say that too. This is the way various things can be interpreted in all different manners. On the other hand, let's take Nixon. Have you noticed that a lot of guys who are for Nixon now, for example, that were at the convention down in Miami, were anti-Nixon people just a few years ago? I can name some specific ones. A couple of entertainers. You saw it. Well, all right. Are they wrong? I don't know. This thing is, their situation has changed. They see different perceptions than they saw a few years ago. So nobody's wrong, and you have every right to change your allegiance and so on. In fact, I say this. If you're not a man who doesn't change your allegiance from time to time, you're not a man who's examining the issues. Because no one given party is going to be right in every conceivable issue and at every conceivable time. No way. So if anybody says to me, I'm a lifelong mugwump, oh, that poor guy, you know, obviously he doesn't read issues, doesn't care about candidates. He's a mugwump. Whatever it is, he doesn't worry about who's running and who isn't running, who's saying what. He knows he's a mugwump, and he's going to vote for whatever the mugwump people are running at that time. And that is terrible. To me, that's a sad commentary on the political scene. Anybody that comes up and says, well, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm a lifelong Republican. I said, what do you mean? You know, how can you be that way? Because conditions change. Political parties change. The attitudes change. Many, many things change. One party may be right at one given time in history and wrong in the next. So are you going to continue to vote constantly on one side merely because you voted on that side for all of your life? That's silly. that really is. That's a restatement, by the way, of the old political canard. And it was a patriotic canard that said, my country, right or wrong, my country. Well, that's just as silly to say, because your country can be wrong, just like other countries have been wrong in the past. Our country is no different than any others. We're human beings. We can also make boo-boos, and we have. My God, we have. Take a look at the recent 10 years, if you want to see a collection of them. But this is the way with all nations. There's no nation that can say they were always on the side of right. Very difficult to find one. But this is a... If you find one, it ain't a nation. It's a very small island, and it has 12 people on it, and is populated mostly by pigs and dragonflies. but any nation of large numbers of people cannot conceivably say. And by the way, wrong is often defined as being on the wrong side, the losing side. That's really what a mistake generally winds up being. If you're on the losing side of a situation, you're generally wrong. If you're on the winning side, ultimately history will say you've been right. And so that's another thing, you see. I wonder what it would have been like if 100 years ago, if the South had won the war. Just curious, what our history books would say about it now. I mean, how would we be defined it as an evil victory? Or would we say, well, see, we were fortunate in that they won this war? I'm just curious. I just throw it out. I don't know. You know, I don't. No, nobody knows. And anybody who's... Now, immediately, I'm going to get 5 letters from people who say, you should read XXX novel because it's written on that theme. But that... he doesn't know any more than you do. He's just sitting around blowing smoke, too. Nobody knows. Knows. That's the key word. A lot of people can imagine. But to know, no. No way. I'm sure that let's take our current Vietnam situation, which is, thank God, showing signs of winding down. That back in the late 50s and early 60s, it was a very different scene than it is today. And the people who voted for it, they couldn't know, you know, what would ultimately happen as a result of it. And I'm not giving any excuses for anybody, but this is the way it is. It's much easier for you to sit back, you know, and us, me, everybody, and show where things have gone wrong. And in any given society, there's always a large group of backward lookers who are always pointing out past mistakes. And they're necessary, I suppose. Sure, we should know what we've done wrong. But that's often taken as a firm grasp of reality. Not necessarily. It's a firm grasp of knowledge of who loses and wins. That's not necessarily real. But getting back to the original point, I don't know why I'm on this subject tonight, but, you know, the election is coming up next week. And I can't put down a man for what he stands for, because he stands for those things, not because he's necessarily wrong. This is what I'm really getting at. He stands for those things because he is different from me. We are individuals. And in the most profound sense, that his life has been different, his situations are different. He perceives things in a different way. His religion has been different. Many, many things have gone into his life are different. Even if we live in the next apartment, he lives, you know, he's still different. People can grow up next to you your entire life, and they're as different from you as a grape is from a watermelon. Why? Well, that's the human animal. He has his individuality. And so if you're for somebody, if you're for Nixon, I'm not going to sit there and say you're a fool and a knave. You're just different. You do, and you have the right to do it. If on the other hand, and by the way, for you're probably very right. On the other hand, if you're for McGovern, I say the same thing. I'll say, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about McGovern. I mean, so you don't know who Shepherd is for, right? And the point I'm getting at is it's not necessarily true that Shepherd knows. Because when you see the political arguments back and forth, you know that there's something bigger than both of those men, and that's I suppose you might call a sweep of history, events over which we have no control. Nobody knows what's going to happen next year. No way. That's what makes life exciting. If you did know, it would be a bore. Speaking of that, we have a couple of commercials here. Let's see, what do you have in there?
And now, a super shoe bonus from Shoe Town.
Oh, yes, of course, a super shoe bonus. Men, how would you like to have the very same luxury leather dress shoes that sell in exclusive men's shops for up to $40? Yours for just $19 to $25. Impossible, you say? Oh, no. Not at Super Shoe. Super Shoe wants you to make Super Shoe your headquarters for all your shoe shopping. Try saying that fast. So he always has the great buys throughout the men's department at Shoe Town. Let's see, Shoe Town. Oh, yeah, yeah. The following little dinghy is a paid political announcement.
I'm John Gilhooly, speaking for Transport of New Jersey and all the New Jersey motor bus industry. We want you to know that we are doing everything we can to provide you with the best possible buses and service, but we need your help. The passage of the transportation bond issue by the voters of New Jersey can mean as many as 1,500 modern, air-conditioned new buses, plus much improved service. So please, vote yes for the transportation bond issue on November 7th. Thank you.
Paid for by the New Jersey motor bus industry.
Now here's something exciting. Come and sit upon my knee, Kasha. You know, and by the way, you know, there's a theory, and it's an interesting one, that conservative men and radical men, I mean, whatever your tend happens to be, and it's hard to tell whether, see, I think if you're a rock-bound conservative, you are, in our time, a radical. and to me, a radical does not mean left or right, it means a radical. In fact, there's a play currently playing in Moscow that has just gotten a great deal of comment in Moscow. It's about America, but one line comes out that has caused a lot of contention in Moscow, and it was this line. The character says, an extremist on the left is the same as an extremist on the right. He is one thing. He is an extremist. I don't like that. Nevertheless, there's a theory that says that if you're an adventurous type and you're not afraid of the future or not afraid to try things, which could be called, a liberal or radical, that it's reflected in your attitude towards food. Do you see the truth of that? You know, there's Ambrose Bierce, for example, came up with a very interesting, his Devil's Dictionary. Bierce defined a liberal Democrat as a politician that sleeps with other guys' wives. I didn't like that one, and I didn't invent it. That's a literary quote. It's from Ambrose Bierce's Devil's Dictionary, that, by the way, was written in 1890. So you can see it has many connotations. It has sexual, food, and everything else. The attitude of liberal and conservative. Now let's get back to food here. We got Kasha with us, and if you're tired of the same old potatoes and stuff, why don't you try Kasha? It really is good. It's an old Russian delicacy. It's called Kasha. And if you haven't tried it, you may enjoy it. In fact, I do. It's little kernels of roasted buckwheat grain is what it really is. And one of the best kashas around is Wolf's Kasha. You can fix it in with almonds. You can do it with paprika. You can do it with all kinds of things. And they have a kosher cookbook, and you can send for it. It's sent for Wolfs, with two F's, Wolfs, in care of me, in WR New York. And they'll send you a kosher cookbook. Got to be over 21, of course, because it gets pretty pretty heady at times. Let's see, what else do we have here? Gramercy Park Close, right? 64 West 23rd Street says, and we quote, 16 advertising men and one mother-in-law have been trying to write commercials for Gramercy Park. Well, it sounds like it. So what I'm going to do is throw them out, and I'm just going to tell you, if you want to save your money on suits, if you've been paying a lot for suits and you want to dress well, you may find you'll save some dough and have good clothes, too, at Gramercy Park. They're at 64 West 23rd Street, and they're open every day. They're open from Saturdays and Sundays, and they're at, 64 West 23rd Street in New York. 64 West 23rd Street, New York, on the third floor, and take care of that mother-in-law. Now, let's see, we have, we're really loaded. We have one more commercial. Let's do it, huh? How about Alexis Lachine Wines? If you want to be known as the wine expert of the Lower Bronx, I would suggest that you learn one name. It's Alexis Lachine, L-I-C-H-I-N-E, Lachine, Alexis Lachine. And they import magnificent wines. They're French wines, and they have a lovely bottle, a curvaceous, distinctive bottle to grace your elegant table in the Lower Bronx. And this is Alexis Lachine Wines. They have all kinds, reds, whites, rosés, all kinds. You just remember the name. Just go and say, Alexis Lachine. And the guy behind the counter is going to say, Jaime's in again. He's a fantastic wine expert. They're imported by Bass Charrington Vintners of New York. Alexis Lachine. Alexis Lachine. Fine. Final foul. All right. We got three more, so let's do them in a hurry, I guess. All right, but you know, getting back to this problem of saying who you're for, in the end, you know, I think most people, in the end, definitely go out and vote on the basis of a kind of gut impulse, and they don't really know. You know, they don't really sit down and analyze things. They don't sit down and weigh the issues. You know, that's one of the cherished beliefs. You know, of people, the official people, Walter Cronkites, who present this issue, what the candidate feels about that issue, because I think most people have a curious gut way of voting. And for that reason, it's almost impossible. And it changes, you know. That's the strange problem. You know, these polls have been wronger more often than they've been right, you know. And if you think this is not true, they're very quiet about that. And, of course, the most famous times are Truman and 48 and so on. But in the very largest sense, some of the worst defeats that the pollsters have had is when they have picked the winner, but they have not at any point picked the amount that he's going to win or lose by. For example, a very well-known example is that in 1956, I believe it was, when Stevenson was running against, Stevenson was running against Eisenhower. And it was predicted by almost every poll that it was going to be a very close election, believe it or not. Well, it turned out to be a landslide. They couldn't predict a landslide. But they were very quiet about it because they did pick Eisenhower. They said he was going to win, but it was going to be very close. Well, it was a joke. Many polls, by the way, in 64, said that it was going to be a very close election between Goldwater and Johnson. I'm talking about respectable polls. Of course, that was the biggest landslide, I guess, in modern history. And so polls, you know, because I think polls tend to relate to a guy's intellect. They ask him, what do you feel about such and such an issue? That's an intellectual idea. What do you think about such and such a problem in the Middle East? That's an intellectual idea. But the idea of a man walking into a poll is often a very subjective scene. Something that happened to him 5 minutes before he goes in the poll, in that voting booth, may change it. He's sitting there having coffee. He's going to go walk down the end of the street to vote. And somebody says to him, boy, oh boy, anybody that votes for that Gumpox is out of his bird. Here the guy he's talking to has been for weeks thinking, well, I think I'll vote for Gumpox. And this may be a guy that he kind of likes and admires that he's talking. He says, anybody that votes for Gumpox is out of his bird. They should vote for, you know, Schmidlap is the only guy that you can't even consider him, but Schmidlap in that race. Well, right there it's changed. The guy walks down the street and says, you know, he may be right. Bam, 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 Schmidlap gets a vote. Now, Schmidlap may be a pickpocket, he may be a horse thief, but somehow, because his friend Jaime seemed to have such an air of assurance about the fact that Schmidlap was the only guy you should elect, he went down and did it. Now, this happens endless numbers of times. Do you agree with that? So how the hell can any pollster predict that? I mean, how can he? And you know what? One of the most fascinating things that I've noticed too is it goes to the whole population. It isn't just, we tend to today divide our population into specific age groups more than ever in our history. So there's the youth vote. And by the way, I think this is the new development of our time that could be ultimately pernicious. We divide our people into various pressure groups. People vote as black, or they vote as Italian, or they vote as Jewish, or they vote as a Croatian, or they vote as Catholic or Protestant, or they vote as youth, or they vote as middle age, or they vote as old people. And this could ultimately divide the nation more than anything, more than the Civil War, ultimately. Because at least there was only one major issue in that one. It had some pretty shaky moral concepts anyway involved. But in our time, we tend to think of people in you know, very specific groups, voting as groups. And that could be a fallacy. Could be a fallacy. In fact, I don't think youth, according to many of the polls and many of the people and many of the things that have happened on campus recently, is as unified as any other group of the people. After all, we're all human beings. We're all different. And a conservative 19-year-old could be a conservative 19-year-old, not because he's 19, but because his whole background is a certain thing. And let's see. Let's give you another pitch for winter tires. I'm getting tired of talking about winter tires, but yes, I am. It's not funny. I really am. But there's a lot of them here, and we're going to do it. And the idea of winter tires is a good one. If you're going to wish you'd listen to me some night when you're up to your you-know-what in snow, trying to get out of it with them baldies. So you go in snow, or General pays the toll. That's right. Not going to be so funny. In Freeport, ask for John or Jack Miles at the J&J Miles Rubber Company, 160 East Merrick Road. And why don't I do two of those? Do I have two of those? Why don't I do two of those right in a row? All right? I will again repeat. I repeat. General Tire, friend, if you get the potato out of your ear, you go in snow or General pays the toll. I repeat. General winter cleat tires have a deep self-cleaning cleat pattern, which is a hell of a lot more than you can say for yourself. Wide, sure-footed. Now, that's certainly more than you are. And they're beautiful tires. Your tires will have a hell of a lot more character than you will. So, you go down to your General Tire dealer, and don't forget their famous slogan. I've just forgotten it. I'll look it up. You go in snow, or General pays the toll. George. Ask for Bill Schreck at General Tire Service, 890 West Jericho Turnpike in Smithtown. And we have one more goodie to lay on you, so stop quivering. Here it comes.
Okay, so you don't believe that an unidentified flying object landed in the park. You think somebody threw a pizza out the window. Well, Danny Dowder, let me tell you about a show I just reviewed on WCBS TV Channel 2 called UFO, which stands for UFO, and maybe you'll have second thoughts, even ninth thoughts. This is a science fiction show about UFOs because a lot of stuff they talk about could be happening. Now, don't watch the show because there's a lot of action and suspense. And don't watch the show because some of those nifty space girls in their brief space outfits could blow your mind. Watch the show because it zaps your mind. Hello, Boom Boom. This is Mushy 12. Come in. Come in. UFO will be on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock on WCBS TV Channel 2. It's a brand new show. It's an hour long, so prime time starts at 7 on Saturday nights, and it just makes you wonder about that flying saucer in the park. UFO. UFO, if you prefer. And thanks for letting me tell you about it.
Gee whiz. Don't worry, anytime. You can just come and take over the show anytime, fella, and be a cutie poo like you there. Anytime. Just come in here and leave your little pink shoes, though, at the door. That's a nipsy, cutie poo little thingy. Yeah? That's very good. Oh, my. Well, you see, friends, nobody knows where it'll end. So you see, friends, we have living proof that man is unpredictable. They probably put $12 million in that turkey. And we'll see. We'll see. So good luck, candidates. This is your last weekend. And by next week at this time, in fact, well before next week at this time, by next week at this time, we will know who the next president of the United States will be. And I might say this. I think one of the great excitements of everybody's lives, and maybe this is ultimately why we have them, that elections, and particularly presidential elections, are the single most exciting things that a nation involves itself in, this short of an all-out war. You agree? And that our history is about elections, really. And this is, after all, history is exciting. Now, you know that they'll be reading in a history book. Somebody, some kid, will be reading in a history book 100 years from now about the election of 1972. And you'll be there. And you'll even have voted in it. You know, maybe just a little tiny footnote, you know, one of those little dull elections like the time Millard Fillmore defeated John Jay Charlie Horse Johnson, or whoever it was who ran against him. But nevertheless, it's right there in the book. And you're involved. So we'll see. It's going to be fascinating. By the way, if you're driving around that particular night, you know, if you can't get near a set or a TV or something else, but don't forget WOR is going to have all the election stuff on all the way, man, Tuesday night. And you know, in many ways, you hear it quicker and faster on radio, curiously enough, because TV needs all, they got to make all the posters and signs to hold up. You just do a test some night. Listen to a radio station and at the same time have TV on. See which has it fastest. I'm just curious about that. This is WOR New York. You stay tuned for Lester Smith with the news.
The news in detail on the hour from the WOR newsroom.